Welcome to the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast from the University of Birmingham. In each edition, we hear from an expert in a different field who gives us insider information on key trends, upcoming events, and what they think the near future holds.
Today, we're with Dr. Matt Bridge, who is Senior Lecturer in Coaching and Sport Science. Welcome, Matt.
Hi.
So particularly key at the moment with the Olympics coming up. Exciting.
Yes, a major sporting event. Well, the biggest major sporting event coming to the UK in under 2 years now. Obviously, we've just had the Commonwealth Games where our athletes did very well. And what's very interesting about the Olympics is how we prepare our athletes from when they take up sport all the way through. And are we doing it in the right way?
And you've just done a massive survey and these results are hot off the press, I understand, looking at those very key issues around things like how early should children specialise if they're going to go into sport seriously? What are the best ways to develop talented sports people?
Yeah, absolutely. We've carried out this survey on over 1,000 people engaged in sport from all levels of participation, those competing at national level, all the way down to those who literally aren't competing anymore or only did sport at school. And we're interested in finding out how many sports people did as they went through their early childhood, through adolescence, up to the age of 16, 18, and how that impacted upon their performance.
And what have you found out?
Well, what we found out is that it's much better when you're younger, and in fact, all the way through your youth, to do what we call a diversity of sports. So rather than specialising in one sport very early on, it seems that as a general rule, not without exceptions, you're much better off doing a range of sports and maybe not even specialising in one sport until you are 16, 18, or maybe even a little bit older. One example would be if we look at somebody who's 7 years old, if you're playing three or more sports a week when you're 7 years old, then by the time you get to 16 to 18, you're 2.5 times more likely to be playing sport at national level than you are to simply be doing your school sport.
That's quite a big difference. So if you're a parent of a talented youngster, don't force them just to stick to the one sport. Make sure they're doing a range of things.
Obviously, one of the difficult things for parents and also for sports governing bodies is that if you look in the popular press, if you read some of the books that are out there, it's kind of this notion of if you want to become an expert at anything, you have to do 10,000 hours has been bandied about or 10 years of deliberate practice to become an expert in any domain, not just a sporting domain. Now, it seems that intuitively, if you're going to get 10,000 hours, you need to specialize in sport, in one sport at an early age,
yeah,
so you can
young.
Become an expert very young. But what our data is actually starting to show is that there's no need to do this. And actually, you are probably going to be better off doing a number of sports all the way through. So we've seen at a seven-year-old, if you're doing three sports, you're 2.5 times more likely to play at national level. As we move a little bit older, if you're playing three or more sports at the age of 11, so you've still got a range of sports that you're doing, you're almost two times more likely to be playing national sport or representative sport, so those higher levels of sport, than literally just doing school sport. What we saw is that when we looked at people who are 15 years old, asked people to recall when you're 15, how many sports were you playing? We found that if they were playing three or more sports still at the age of 15, then they were 2.5 times more likely to play at representative sport level or national league level compared to those who are playing one sport at 15. So, you know, diversification and trying lots of different sports is really important.
Those are really interesting findings. And you've also been looking at the types of schools that sports people attended and how that impacts on their performance as well.
Well, for some time, people in my field have always had this impression that if you go to certain types of school, then you're going to play more sport and potentially you're going to reach a higher level in sport. So we explored this in our questionnaire as well, in the data that we collected. And we looked at what's the sort of the change in your likelihood of playing at national and representative level between being at a grammar school, so a selective school, a private independent school, and then a state comprehensive school. And what we see is basically if you're at a private school where we would imagine generally there's going to be probably more access to sport, often better sports facilities as well, you're almost three times more likely if you go to a private school to play national level sport than somebody at a comprehensive school when you're between 16 and 18 years of age.
That is quite shocking. Do you find that shocking?
I find it shocking. And one of the issues that it raises is, are we giving children and youth and adolescents and people at school, pupils, enough chance to find what they're good at? Are we giving them enough sports?
So this school's data presumably might have something to say about how can we find those athletes of the future who are going to be our medal winners? Because if that's restricted, or it's being restricted slightly by the type of school people are going to, there must be, surely, many, many talented people out there who just aren't in the right schools and we will never find them.
There are going to be a lot of people out there who are going to have a good ability, or, you know, if they work hard, the chance to be very, very good and maybe even elite in their sport, that maybe are missing out because they're not trying these range of sports, which is available to people at a private school. One of the big questions for us is, how do we get this range of sports out there? Now, if you go and watch any PE lesson, how many PE teachers at the end of a lesson say, if you want to try this sport more, here's a list of clubs? Okay, to give the context, because we can't expect PE teachers to do everything. We have club networks out there. We have partnerships between schools and clubs, and we really need to make the most of those partnerships. In terms of thinking about Olympic legacy, the links between PE, teachers, school, club partnerships is probably the bit that we're best prepared for post-Olympics. So we really need to make sure that PE teachers are pushing club sport, because when they leave school, it's the clubs where they're going to hopefully continue participation.
And you also found a youngster's chance of going on to play high-level sport depends on where they live, whether they live in the city or in the countryside.
If you live outside of the big urban conurbations, you're almost twice as likely to be playing representative sport at 16 to 18 years of age than if you live in a really big city. Why is this? Well, it may be that if we think about lots of sports clubs, it may be that in rural areas, there's more access to a wider range of sports and people find the right sport. Whereas in an urban area, it may be that sports are more concentrated. Maybe it's more of a football focus and people maybe don't find the or have the options to find the sport that they're looking for.
We're all looking forward to the Olympics. And there's this idea that having the Olympics in Britain is really going to stimulate mass participation in sport. Is that what's going to happen? Are we going to be left with this great Olympic legacy?
There are targets already for the Olympic year 2012-2013 of 1 million more people doing sport. Now, 1 million more people doesn't sound like a lot, but is actually a lot more people that you've got to get off a sofa somewhere and out the door to do sport. Will this happen? Will we drive even more mass participation after the Olympics? I'm not sure. There is evidence from other places. 2000 Sydney Olympics. The data that they've seen from there was a slight blip, a little increase in participation, but it didn't last.
A blip for how long?
One year
About
or so,
a year,
year to 18 months. In fact, it's something that we might call the Wimbledon effect. Uh-huh. If you look during the 3 weeks of Wimbledon, if you go down your local tennis court, it will be full of people, all the tennis courts in the park, there'll be children in there playing tennis, they're seeing on TV, they want to go out and play tennis. If you go 6 weeks later, still the summer, still good weather, nobody playing tennis. So it's a very sort of transitional up and down. Question is, with the Olympics, if we get the up, how do we keep the up in participation there? So that's really key for us.
So I'm thinking that your answer to this, is there going to be an upsurge in mass participation in sport as an Olympic legacy? Your answer to this is going to be, no, probably not.
Well, intuitively, it's a great idea, isn't it?
Yep.
You know, you see sport on television, you see people winning, it makes you really excited. You go, I want to be a 100-meter runner, I want to go and play tennis, I want to throw the javelin, I want to swim in the pool. But all the evidence says, no, it's not going to happen. But where this increase in mass participation may happen is in schools. It's the one place where we're really set up to hopefully drive a legacy of participation through the PESCL agenda. What we're offering to our young people is a real chance to have a sustained legacy from the Olympics. And if we give them all those choices or all the diversity of sports to try that as well, then also in terms of our performance at future Olympics.
Dr. Matt Bridge, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast and others in the series are available on the Ideas Lab website, www.ideaslabuk.com. On the website, you can find out how to email us with comments, questions, or suggestions for future topics for the podcast. There's also information on the free support Ideas Lab has to offer to TV and radio producers, new media producers, and journalists. The interviewer for the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast was Lucy Vernal, and the producer was Andy Tootell.